On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers is calling racism a public health crisis and urging the legislature to pass Assembly Bill 1012 that would attempt to curb the use of deadly force in law enforcement. In a video message last week,
"This legislation is an important first step, but we know the solution to racism isn't in one bill or one person. I know I don't have all the answers. No one does. This is on all of us together."
The bill did not make it out of committee. No Republican co-sponsors. How do you want the legislature to respond to the protests? What economic relief proposals should they consider right now? We're at 800-642-1234. Janet Bewley is a Democratic state senator who represents a large portion of northwest Wisconsin, including Superior, Ashland, and Rice Lake. She is the Senate Minority Leader. Senator Bewley, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. I'm so pleased to be here.
We also have Greta Neubauer with us, a Democratic state representative from Racine. Representative Neubauer, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start with the Assembly Bill 1012. You support the use of force bill that Governor Evers is urging lawmakers to pass in the wake of George Floyd's death. Why do you support it?
George Floyd's death has forced the rest of the country to wake up to what Black Americans have long known, that the system doesn't treat everyone equally, and it's long past time for significant reforms. There have been protests in Racine, around the state, around the country, every day. For over a week. You know, people are angry that this country has yet to live up to its promises. And so as lawmakers, I believe there are three primary things we need to do right now. We need to consider reforms that we can implement immediately, including AB 1012. We need to look at new models of how we can reimagine or reinvent public safety. And third, and equally importantly, we need to address the root causes of inequity in our society. So I signed on to this bill earlier this year because, as I said, it's past time to rethink the parameters for policing in our communities. And as Governor Evers said, this is a critical first step.
Senator Bewley, what can you add here?
Well, I think that Representative Neubauer is correct, that we have to take action that will correct very specific aspects of Wisconsin law and how we can directly make changes in statute. But I think we also need to be part of a larger conversation across the state and across the nation that looks at why there are so many inequities in so many aspects of life for African Americans. If we look at the prison populations, if we look at the rate of disease and lack of access to health, there are so many public policies that have systemic problems that that continue to hold up discrimination in our country. It is systemic, and it is oftentimes absolutely unheard, or people would never think that they are, that these injustices are happening, but indeed they are built into the system.
Representative Neubauer, one part of the legislation is that any force used should be the least amount necessary. And there's criticism to that because that, you know, you don't know, you would never know what the least amount is. It's not a standard that you would know. So why is that language in the legislation?
We are talking about broad parameters for policing in Wisconsin. And what George Floyd's death and many others across the country have shown us is that deadly force is being used in instances where it simply isn't necessary. I think we can all agree that determining whether or not a $20 bill was fraudulent shouldn't result in deadly force in any circumstances. So what we're talking about with this bill is setting forward guidelines that police and communities can use and understand that will push us to examine different tactics and different models going forward.
We're talking state politics with two Democratic lawmakers from opposite parts of the state. We have State Representative Greta Neubauer there from Racine and State Senator Janet Bewley from Mason. And your questions, how do you want lawmakers to respond at this moment to the protests, to the economic issues? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's turn to the pandemic now. In April, Representative Neubauer, the number of coronavirus cases is climbing in your county, and state health authorities say that it now in Racine County has more cases per capita than any other county in Wisconsin. How is the community responding?
Yeah, so Racine is being hit very hard by COVID-19. You know, there are underlying factors that lead to that significant caseload. Many people in our community have long struggled to get access to health care and stable housing. Many people are essential workers or work in the service industry. So as you said, we have a significant number of cases. We're a national hotspot. And I think it's also important to point out that those cases aren't hitting everyone the same way. 85% of those cases are people of color. The virus is disproportionately impacting women. So all of our local units of government are working really hard to respond to the pandemic, keep people safe. We've had free testing for the last 3 weeks. Food distribution continues through the school district. But we certainly need more help in Racine, both to keep people safe, to get through the pandemic, and then also to help weather the economic impacts of the virus. It has taken a really long time. Some would say we still haven't recovered from the economic crisis in 2008, which is why I am part of the coalition of Assembly Democrats who put forward the COVID-19 response plan, which addresses some critical policy areas, healthcare, economy, and democracy that we need to take action on now.
Senator Bewley, how is the coronavirus pandemic unfolding where you live in northwest Wisconsin?
Right now, we are seeing pretty much a flattening. Once in a while, a case will pop up. But I want to point out that the rural hospitals suffered considerably during the entire pandemic. One, to be able to respond to the existing positive cases in the symptomatic cases, but also in the lack of non-emergency surgical procedures. They are suffering right now. If things went back to normal per se, they are still way in the hole financially. To burden those rural hospitals that were burdened already with a lack of intensive care beds, a lack of equipment, to put another outbreak of COVID on top of those already very, very fragile institutions would be catastrophic. They would, you know, these are mostly critical access hospitals that have limitations on how many beds they have and how many intensive care beds they have. And in many cases, the number of intensive care beds in a county are around a dozen. And so if we were to be hit with another COVID outbreak, particularly under the circumstances now where so many tourists and second homeowners are coming into the area, it would be a true crisis.
We're talking with Senate Minority Leader Janet Bewley of Mason, Representative Greta Neubauer here of Racine. What questions do you have about the pandemic and how state lawmakers are responding? Have you filed a claim for unemployment in recent weeks? What has your experience been like? What issues should be front and center for lawmakers? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with more State Cap right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The fight against COVID-19 is affecting all corners of Wisconsin. Health authorities say the total number of Wisconsinites who have tested positive since the outbreak started is now closing in on 21,000. What do you want lawmakers to know about how the pandemic has affected you and your family? How would you prioritize state and federal tax dollars? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We have two Democratic lawmakers with us. Senate Minority Leader Janet Buley is here and Representative Greta Neubauer. Let's take a call now. Carol is joining us from Milwaukee this morning. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I think the way of looking at the legislation would be to try to get things changed so that the poor are not always excluded and discriminated against, and the rich are not so favored. If they could change the legislation in that direction.
Representative Neubauer, can you respond to that?
I absolutely agree. This is a critical conversation for us to be having in Wisconsin and across the country. I would say that we are doing our best to listen to folks in our communities. I know right now I'm out talking to protesters, as are many of my colleagues, continuing these conversations about the reforms that we need to see on particularly these pressing issues of policing and criminal justice, but of course also COVID and the economic fallout. I'll also just point to key Democratic reforms. We are going to have a hard time getting policy passed that truly works for working people and low-income people if we continue to allow money to have such a big say in our political process. So really appreciate that thought, and definitely something that we are working on.
Senator Buley, what do you make of being able to focus more on the putting dollars toward people who need it and not wealthier, the wealthier echelon?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I appreciate the caller bringing that up. Let's just look at one major policy that this state has consistently refused, and that is the healthcare dollars that are sitting in Washington that Wisconsin refuses to accept. Now, that's called Medicaid expansion. The other people are referring to just federal healthcare. But if you look at the COVID situation and the pressure again on these rural hospitals, they are starting to think about closing their behavioral health units because they are so dependent upon Medicaid. Our nursing homes in rural areas, we see closures of nursing homes, again, because of the percentage of people that are on Medicaid. Medicaid pays 20 cents on the dollar in some cases, and we cannot expect these very vulnerable institutions to consistently take these losses over and over again, simply because the state of Wisconsin refuses to accept the billions of dollars in Medicaid that is waiting for us in Washington, D.C.
Last week, Republican State Senator Patrick Teston was here on the State Capitol Report, and we talked about the likelihood of upcoming floor votes.
And in conversations I've had with the Senate Majority Leader, there's still roughly about 150 bills that are still sitting out there that the Assembly sent to us on their last day. And so at some point, I believe the Senate will come back. It's just a matter of when.
Senator Buley, when do you think the Senate could next vote on any type of legislation?
When the rest of the Republicans in the caucus are pressured by people like Senator Teston to do it. Right now, there seems to be no interest by the majority leader in the Senate to bring people back. I don't know if he is focusing, of course, Senator Fitzgerald is focusing on his election to Congress. And I truly believe that the needs and desires of the Wisconsin people are being pushed to the side. We can go to the floor at any time and pick up these bills and pass them. Yet we hear nothing except comments like that from Senator Teston that, oh, we'll get there eventually. I want to see it. I want to see a date. I want to have these bills passed. And there's absolutely no reason not to go to the floor very soon.
Senator Teston had raised concerns last week about how the state is handling unemployment claims. Do you see legislative fixes that are needed there, Senator?
I see that the Department of Workforce Development has been asking for money to update antiquated software and systems that are pervasive in DWD that they inherited from the Walker administration. Every time a request has been made to update the mainframe, they are turned down. The system simply was not built to manage normal business, let alone an influx of claims like we're seeing now. Yet it is the staff, it's the people, it is Secretary Frostman that are being blamed when, in fact, a system built on COBOL. If people remember
the programming language.
Pardon me?
The programming language, yes. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
COBOL, COBOL. That is what they're using. And yet the Republicans have refused to give the department the money they need to upgrade.
Representative Greta Neubauer, the Assembly wrapped up its regular session work in February. What are your top priorities if the Assembly would take more votes this year?
We did wrap up our regular session, but we are not in regular time. And frankly, I think it's an abdication of our duty, an abdication of the oath of office that we took, not to come back into session right now. We are busier than ever in my office. We are getting calls every day from people who have questions, from people who need help. And the impacts of COVID-19 are not going to end anytime soon. So as I mentioned earlier, we have put forward a package of bills, the COVID-19 response plan, and those are in the areas of healthcare. We've heard from hundreds of healthcare workers over the course of this crisis, and as they've said many times, they need more than a thank you. They need PPE, they need hazard pay, they need sick pay. Essential workers, right, are scared to go to work, scared to get sick, and scared to stay home if they do get sick. So we need to fight for them and put some more money in their pockets. Small businesses continue to struggle, and they will need more help to make it through this crisis. And finally, in the area of democracy, we need to ensure that everyone can safely participate in the elections throughout this year, and they aren't forced to choose between safety and their vote. So we need to ensure vote by mail for the entirety of the year.
We're discussing state politics with two Democratic lawmakers from opposite corners of Wisconsin. That was State Representative Greta Neubauer from Racine. We also have State Senator Janet Bewley from Mason. And you at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jim in River Falls now. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Thanks for having the program. Yeah, I think they made some points. The representatives made some points that we should be taking those Medicaid dollars, but I think the inequities are so clear, and with this COVID thing, how poorly our healthcare system is in the United States. I think, there needs to be reform to the national healthcare system too. And I hope, that becomes part of the national party platform for Joe Biden and the Democrats, because we should have universal healthcare. It's just this whole epidemic has shown how inadequate our healthcare system is, and people can go bankrupt from losing their jobs and then having big healthcare bills, and it's just caused great financial hardship for working families and the poor. And I mean, those are the ones that typically suffer in any sorts of situations like this. And, they shouldn't nobody should really have to worry about their health care in this country.
Jim, thank you for the call. Senator Bewley, as Jim is saying there, this issue, though, is bigger than Wisconsin.
It is larger than Wisconsin, but at the same time, Wisconsin needs to do what it can do. Let me point out that so far, the state of Wisconsin has not dipped into its own coffers to help in the COVID crisis. All of the money that you have heard about, whether it's in the form of aid to small businesses, backfilling local units of government, giving money to or trying to help out the university system, that's all federal money. That's all. The state has not committed a penny to any program to help in COVID. It is money that was either already in the budget or it's federal money, but no new dollars. They refused to commit Wisconsin money to any of the programs. So we are, the state itself is not even participating in any of the programs that are already existing on the federal level. We have a long way to go before it even becomes close to being fair. But I do agree, we must across the board elect people who are going to see healthcare as a right.
Thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. Great to be here.
Thank you. Would love to come back again.
Janet Bewley, a Democratic state senator who represents a large part of Northwest Wisconsin. Greta Neubauer, Democratic state representative from Racine. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White briefing us on protests in the capital city in the wake of George Floyd's death and election news developments ahead of the fall. Stay with us. There is more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Protests of systematic racism and police brutality against communities of color continued through the weekend in Wisconsin. Here are voices from Madison last week with the Capitol Dome lit up in the night sky.
Township! 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 Township!
Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter and co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. She has been working alongside her colleagues in the newsroom covering these protests and developments day and night following the death of George Floyd 2 weeks ago. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
You were out on the streets of Madison yesterday and last night. What did you see?
So last night was an event organized in Madison by the African American Council of Churches. It was a group of people that included, you know, congregations from a variety of faith groups in Madison, a wide swath of, you know, ages, races. I saw families there with young kids, as young as 5 and 6, students, some of the familiar faces that we've seen at protests throughout the past week in Madison, and then some new folks. I talked to several people who said because it was a Sunday night, they didn't have work, they were able to come out and participate for the first time. It was about, I think, around 1,000 people at the Capitol by the end of it, and at least several hundred that marched down State Street last night.
What were speeches like?
So the speeches really varied. The faith leaders kind of kicked off the first half or so. They spoke at the very outset of the march, talking about how justice doesn't know race, justice doesn't know religion, talking about kind of the role of religion in people's faith as they are part of this movement and they continue the movement. And then when we got to the State Capitol Square and folks kind of flowed down one of the sets of stairs there and into the street and on the lawns, all of the speakers were Black women. There were 5 Black women that spoke, and they spoke about the issues that affect their community particularly. They talked about, in their view, the varying degree of attention that violence against Black women gets. One of the speakers argued that she thinks Black men who are subject to police brutality are more well known than Black women. They talked about health disparities. And then they also talked about issues that relate to the entire community, like what white allies that are participating in these protests can do to help support the Black community now and after daily protests are no longer taking place.
What does State Street look like to you? How is it changing?
I thought it was really striking to walk down State Street yesterday to have these hundreds of protesters walking, carrying signs, and moving past buildings that have been almost without exception boarded up and then painted. There are several, I think it's safe to say dozens, of murals on State Street now that have all been done by local artists. They all include depictions of things like George Floyd, of young Black girls, of famous quotes from Black scholars, messages like Black Lives Matter. And so seeing kind of the color and the brightness of those murals and folks moving by with their signs and chanting, it seemed kind of almost like an alternate reality. You know, working in the state capitol, I walk up and down State Street quite a lot, and it seemed like a very different place from the State Street that I've always known.
Transitioning here to voting in Wisconsin, some of these protests, there have been some, people out getting, voters to sign up. What have you seen there?
I think this is becoming more and more common. I mean, at least in my personal experience, at the outset of these rallies, I didn't see active voter registration efforts. There were certainly people talking about the importance of voting. But I think in the past few days, we're actually seeing across the state booths being set up for people to actually register to vote at the event. And there being a more kind of tangible and organized push to funnel people who are engaging with these issues into voting in not just November in the presidential race, but becoming more familiar with who their elected, who their local elected officials are, and what kind of decisions those folks make and when they're up for election.
So about 3 out of 5 votes in the April election were cast by mail. How will the Wisconsin Elections Commission decide which residents receive an absentee ballot application going forward?
So this is a really interesting change in Wisconsin and kind of how the State Elections Commission is shifting and trying to respond to this new way of people voting during the pandemic. They have been having this debate for several weeks about sending absentee ballot applications to voters, who they're going to send them to, how they're going to pay for it, things like that. So where things stand right now is that pretty much all registered voters in Wisconsin are going to get an absentee ballot application, not the ballot itself, but the application to apply to get one sent to you in the mail, except for 2 very specific groups of people. One of them is a group of people that has already requested an absentee ballot. They already have the request for November on file. You can do that when you requested, say, your absentee ballot for the spring election. You could check a little box that said, I want one for November as well. So that's about 528,000 people. So not a small amount of people, certainly. And then the second group is about 130,000. And those are the individuals that we've talked about kind of a lot in state politics over the past few months. And those are the people that were flagged as potentially having moved in Wisconsin or out of state in that movers list. And there's, as I'm sure you know, that state Supreme Court lawsuit about those people. So they won't be getting the absentee ballot application either.
We're talking with Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter. We're looking at the status of elections. Did you vote absentee in April? Maybe you had to re-register to vote after receiving a notice in the mail. What was the process like? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel, in the face of this economic destruction we're seeing, there could be many, many more evictions. How does this work around the future of evictions as we go through the pandemic and where people could receive their absentee ballots?
So that's a really great question. We obviously don't know how many people are going to be evicted between now and November. I think it's really important for people to know that if you are evicted from the address where you're registered to vote, you obviously won't be there to accept the absentee ballot application that you applied for if you're evicted in the time between, you know, requesting it and receiving it. People are under law supposed to receive those pretty quickly from their local clerk. So it's possible they could get that, return it, and everything would be okay. But it's important for people to know that you can still vote at the address where you're registered to vote, even if you don't live there anymore. The reason that you wouldn't be able to vote at that address is if you had registered to vote at a different address. So even if folks are evicted, bring your ID to the polls, as everybody has to do. Present your ID and you'll still be able to vote. Folks that aren't registered to vote can register to vote at the polls on election day, or if they're not comfortable because of COVID-19 in whatever form it's in November, they can also request, you know, a ballot online or by phone at their local clerk's office to vote by mail.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about vote by mail. The commission's, Wisconsin Election Commission's technology director, Robert Kehoe, said mailing ballot applications would clear up confusion for voters.
In March and April of this year, we all know that clerks processed an extraordinary number of ballot applications, but they also handled an equally extraordinary number of voter telephone calls and emails asking questions.
Laurel, what are the obstacles to implement this plan for the November election?
So I think the big one that really stands out to me right now is the fact that the Wisconsin Elections Commission hasn't completely finalized this system by which it's going to send out these absentee ballot applications to people. So they've agreed that they want to do it. They know who they want to send it to. But they haven't agreed on, and this is might sound a little funny to some listeners, they haven't agreed on the specific wording of the letter that's going to go with the absentee ballot application. But there's actually quite a bit of political stickiness there. There's been some back and forth between Democratic appointed members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission and Republican backed commissioners, kind of saying, how do we want to frame this? We don't, some people don't want it to come across as the state pushing absentee voting or urging or endorsing absentee voting. They just want it to be kind of informational and say, hey, here's an option for you. So the commission is actually going to meet this week to take up that that wording issue. And that needs to be approved before this whole process can move forward and those mailings can go out. I believe if everything is approved and everything goes as planned, those will start going out in September.
Is there a sense that they can reach consensus on the wording?
Well, the Elections Commission has had a number of deadlocked votes recently. We saw that happen a lot before the spring primary. It's a 3-3 split in terms of partisan affiliation on the Elections Commission. So seeing them split on something that has a political bent to it, like this wording, wouldn't be unusual. But we did see them vote 6-0 to approve sending this mailing, and they agreed on who they wanted to send it to. And there had been some debate about that before that. So I could really see it going either way.
We have WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White taking us through political developments and voting. And you can join in. Did you vote before and choose not to vote in the last election? Are you still registered? How do you feel about purging voter rolls? Join in 800-642-1234. More State Cap in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin has 3.4 million registered voters. About 528,000 have requested absentee ballots. Meanwhile, the conflict over potentially ineligible voters is heating up. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is trying to strike about 130,000 names it believes are no longer valid. And the state Supreme Court took up the case. Are you following purge-related litigation? Are you concerned voters will be struck in error and lose the ability to vote? Or is this blown out of proportion and voter rolls should be cleaned up? Weigh in at 800-642-1234. We have WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White, who's our guide. So, Laurel, what is the timeline of this voter purge case?
So this is a case that has been with us for a while. It was first filed in November, and it's kind of worked its way through the process. It was filed in the Ozaukee County Circuit Court. A judge ruled there in December. Interestingly, the Wisconsin Supreme Court was asked to weigh in on whether they would take it on original action pretty soon after that, and they actually declined to do so. What it means to take it on original action is to kind of bypass some of those lower courts, basically jump to the end of the line and have the Supreme Court consider your case. They split 3-3 on whether to do that. One of the justices on the Supreme Court, Justice Daniel Kelly, recused himself from the case because this decision was made when he was still on the ballot for the April election. So he thought it was inappropriate to rule on a case and be involved in a case that had to do with people who, you know, whether people would be able to vote or not. Moving on from that, an appeals court was able to kind of move forward with the process because of the Supreme Court declining. The appeals court ruled in February to reverse the lower court's decision. So kind of some back and forth there. And now we've been set up for the Supreme Court to consider whether it's going to take the case again. Justice Kelly put himself back into the scenario because obviously his April election is over. He did not win election. So he's only serving for a few more months on the Supreme Court. And it was a 4-3 decision, we believe, this time. And they decided that they're going to take the case. So kind of a back and forth, decisions, rejections, petitions since November. And where we've ended up is that the Wisconsin Supreme Court is going to hear this case moving forward.
And so if they move quickly, these voters could be purged in, you know, depending on how the court rules.
That's right. So they could be purged, these roughly 130,000 people as of right now before November. I think it's important to note for folks that there's a really broad variation in how quickly courts move on cases. The way that this is set up right now is we're in the briefing part of the case where the different sides submit documents and arguments to the court. That process, if it takes the maximum amount of time, can take 60 days. And then after that, you've got the oral arguments. And then after that, you've got a decision. Now, there can be varying periods of time between each of those steps. So this is something that is not guaranteed to happen before November or even indeed before August, which is when Justice Kelly leaves the court and the partisan makeup of the court shifts a little bit. So we're really kind of living in a gray area right now in terms of knowing when this decision might be made and what effect, if any, it'll have on the November election.
Let's bring in Lou now from Cudahy. Hi, Lou.
Hello. I think it's outrageous that the Election Commission chooses.
Oh, and Lou, are you still there? I think you got cut off. Nope. Okay, I can't hear you. Laurel, let's look at redistricting here. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is also asking the high court to weigh in on political maps. What is the likelihood that the Supreme Court will weigh in on redistricting?
So this is a complicated question. What they have filed with the Wisconsin Supreme Court isn't a lawsuit. It's actually a rule change petition. So what the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty wants, which they're a conservative advocacy group that files a lot of lawsuits and does a lot of business, I guess you could say, with the Wisconsin Supreme Court. What they want is a rule change that essentially sends all state redistricting cases on original action to the Supreme Court. So I mentioned original action earlier. Essentially, it's the process of just bypassing all of the lower courts, sending cases to the end of the line, sending them right to the Supreme Court to begin with. And what this does, you know, it kind of sets up any legal challenges to redistricting in Wisconsin to be funneled through the Supreme Court, to be funneled through state cases. There has been legal discussion over the past several years about which courts are appropriate to weigh in on things like redistricting, whether it's state courts or federal courts. There was a big conversation during the last lawsuits about Wisconsin's maps that it should be just state courts that were considering challenges because redistricting is inherently a state issue. We saw a lot of federal action during the last set of maps. So basically, if the Supreme Court agrees to this rule change, it's kind of teeing things up for the most part to happen at the state Supreme Court. But it's important to mention that it doesn't preclude anyone from filing a federal lawsuit about Wisconsin's maps. It just kind of changes the tone, I think, for state cases.
We're talking with Laurel White, WPR's State Capitol reporter, and we're looking at developments at the Capitol. Are you unemployed? Did you apply for pandemic unemployment assistance? How long did it take before you received a payment? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's try Lou and Cudahy one more time. Hi, Lou. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I think it's completely outrageous that the Election Commission chooses not to obey the law when they fail to drop these people in question from the voter rolls. It's those people who vote like that need to follow the law. And here's a fine example of what I would call a collapse of the rule of law. And second, the red herring that's thrown out there, well, these people are disenfranchised, the people who maybe bounced off the rolls. No, they're not. They get to vote. They get to register immediately at the polling site, at the voting station, should they find that their name is not on the list of registered voters. So to tell people, oh, they're going to be disenfranchised, that's outrageous. They can register right on the spot.
Lou, thank you for the call. Laurel, do you find that the sentiment from Lou here is a voter has every opportunity to be able to cast a ballot?
Absolutely. I think that's something that I hear from a lot of folks pointing out that Wisconsin is unusual in the fact that it has same-day voter registration. So there is absolutely the possibility for folks who show up to vote, realize that, you know, they've been removed from the list, they can register to vote on Election Day. That's completely true. Some of the pushback to that is that you do have to have a special set of documents to register to vote on Election Day. You have to have a proof of residence document, something like a utility bill or, you know, there's a whole list of things you have to have. You can have with you if you want to register to vote. So some people say if you're not aware that you need to have those documents with you, if you're not aware that you need to register to vote, you think you're already registered, that could create a barrier for some people who set aside the time to go vote. They get there, they realize they don't have what they need, they got to go home, get what they need, and go back. So there's an argument there that it kind of creates an additional barrier for this population of people.
In the last few seconds we have, what is the status of the backlog of unpaid unemployment claims?
So we know that the state is still working through that backlog. It was a pretty sizable backlog. They're working on hiring several hundred more workers within the State Department of Workforce Development to handle just really an unprecedented, at least in recent memory, number of claims in Wisconsin for unemployment. So the state isn't working fast enough in some people's estimation. In others, they're doing the best they can in an unprecedented scenario. But we know right now they're working to hire more people. The head of the department said that really staffing has been one of the biggest obstacles to making sure that things are handled in a timely manner.
Laurel, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter and co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Just ahead, we look at how the pandemic will affect the future of journalism. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.